Tonight, my goal is that we would like to do sort of a transition. So in this topic, understanding grief and moving forward, we are a product of our past. And you can't help it. You can't help where you come from. You can't help the input that has been put into your life and so forth. But it does not need to destroy your future. And so just a quick thought I'll say about you and going into your future. We as older people and, you know, going into these relationships again, it's okay to act like a teenager sometimes. And what you do at home by yourself, don't tell your children. Let's back up and take a look at where we came from. Some of the things that we have experienced. Understanding grief. I'm not here to tell you that I understand grief, but I decided that I would like to share some of the things that I learned and received new understanding in my own journey in the grief world. And I'd like to share that with you. Before I go there, I want to start with a story. I show you this picture, and I know way back, and you can't really see this picture very well, but this is a picture, a white tulip. Very beautifully, perfectly formed. There's a lady at work. She's responsible for all things accounting. She's been there for a while already. And in her story, she lost her father back when she was a teenager. Her father had cancer, and so there was a couple-year period of time there, and her father sort of took her under his wing, and there was communication, and there was some dad training in those years. And I think you can understand that when you recognize that it's my turn to have cancer, and I have children, they're teenagers, what are you going to do? And so you make the most of those moments. She greatly enjoyed the input of her father into her life back in those years. Today, she's still single. She's an older single. And just a couple years ago, she lost her mother. Lost her mother to cancer also. And this was, again, difficult. Her name is Elsie. This was difficult for Elsie to go through and experience. A couple days after Mom passed, she said something to one of her siblings and said, "Do you think we're going to get to see a white tulip?" Her mother loved tulips. Their place had lots of tulips. It was something that her mother did and brought to the farm. And Elsie asked her sister, "Do you think we're going to get to see a white tulip?" A couple days later, when Elsie came home from work, her sister said, "Elsie, did you see it?" And Elsie said, "No, what do you mean?" She said, "Here, I'll show you." She took Elsie outside, and they went around the side of the house to where her mother's bedroom was. And underneath the window, right in the center of the window of her mother's bedroom, was this white tulip. And obviously a direct answer to her thoughts. Would I be privileged to see a white tulip? That tulip was underneath that window for most of the summer. Unusual. And while it answered a need for Elsie and her recognition of God in this journey, winter came, the next spring came, and Elsie wondered again, will we see a white tulip? The white tulip did not come up. And finally, they had enough questions, they went over to Mom's bedroom window, right in the middle, and dug down into the flower bed. There was no bulb there. And again, Elsie realized that was a miracle. That was an exact miracle. And it ministered to her in the moment. A white tulip, perfectly formed, beautiful. I share that story because I think most of you probably have had white tulip stories in your life. And when you went through your journey of pressure, you can look back at something and say, there was God. There was God. And there was no mistake. You couldn't push it away. You couldn't push it away and had to recognize that was God speaking to me in the moment. And typically I found for myself, I needed it too. I needed those moments. And I have my stories to share. This was Elsie's story. But I have my moments, my times to share when God met me in a very personal way that I knew it was he and I. He and I. And a result of my cry at the moment. Grief. The dictionary says that it's intense sorrow, especially over losing a loved one. Then it adds a few more words. It overpowers, it overwhelms, and brings out of control. I think you can identify with all of that, can't you? I could identify with some of that definition. I'm going to go to Genesis chapter 23. I want to read the first two verses here. And then later I want to add a little bit more to this. Genesis chapter 23, verses 1 and 2. And Sarah was 127 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, and the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. It doesn't tell you a lot just by reading that verse. But because of our experiences, you can read a lot into that verse. What all is included when you have the fact Sarah died and Abraham mourns and weeps for her? What is meant by that expression? Interesting for me, I just came back from Israel. Last Friday, I was standing inside the memorial building above the caves of Machpelah, where Sarah's buried. And I thought, interesting. With the caves were not open underneath, so I didn't go down to the caves, but I was in the building up above where Abraham, Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, and Leah and Jacob are buried. Interesting. And I'm reading about this and thinking about I'm here at the location. I'm here at the location where the grave is for Sarah. And thinking about, I wonder what Abraham was thinking. I wonder what Abraham was experiencing. The rest of this chapter then deals with Abraham buying a place to bury Sarah. And so if you go through the story and they had their conversations in order to be able to buy. Those of you that are men or are into money, think about 400 pieces of silver and tell me what that's worth in today's money. And it's just interesting. What do you pay for a grave site for your wife? So a little bunny trail there. I want to share another story. This again, as a man, is a conversation I had with him. And just experiencing some of the loneliness that he had, he would have been one of those that when his wife passed, there was nobody in the house. His children had already moved out of the house. I would put him at approximately 60 years. I didn't ask his age, but I would put him approximately 60 years old. And he just told me, he said that, soon after she passed, I came home from work. The house was empty. The house was dark. The house was cold. There was no supper. And there were no smells of supper. And this time, I was overwhelmed. And he said, I laid down on the kitchen floor and just wept till I couldn't cry anymore. We as men, we kind of get scared with those things. because we're supposed to be men. And just the thought of being overwhelmed or out of control, sometimes it's kind of difficult for us to, in our minds to handle. And so we have our moments, but we're afraid that somebody's going to catch us with our emotions. So there's some apprehension, and we try to hold back a bit in relation to these emotions. But when we find somebody else that has gone through the same experience we have, it becomes more free to share some of these things that we've done that seems foolish to everybody else, and discover I'm still normal. And I still have feelings. And it's okay. It's okay to allow those feelings to be shared. But again, it feels so vulnerable, and sometimes I wish I could just disappear. Do you only realize that if I would disappear, I'd take my pain right with me? It's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. And sometimes we turn to pain relievers. Now, I was the type that I didn't turn to alcohol or drugs for my pain relief. I mean, we know better than that, right? Okay. But what I did is I became a workaholic. So you hit the ground at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the earliest to go to bed was 10 o'clock. Maybe later, a lot of work. And you know what? My children today, when my wife passed, I had my oldest one was married. My next six were still at home, and they were all teenagers. Wait a minute. My youngest one was 12, but they were almost all teenagers, okay? So I had a house full of teenagers. Today, typically sometime in the month of October, we take a long weekend, and we'll go someplace where it's my side of the family, children, their marriages, the grandchildren, and so forth. And you know what? My children say, Dad, not at your house. You're not going to work. Someplace far enough, you can't go to work. So I feel like my workaholic, if you will, affected them to the point that they noticed. And I look at that and say, I use it as a pain reliever. Just go, 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 so you don't think. Are you with me? You just go, go, go. And in our Mennonite society, hard work is a good thing. So you could say it was a good thing, you know what I mean? But I'm here to tell you, some of our good things aren't good. And if my children are at the point where they don't want to come to my place for a long weekend because they're afraid I'm going to go to work, that's a problem. That's a problem. So I just confess it. I just confess it. One of those things that we'll work through that, and I want to bless them. And today we've made some changes, and so I'm at work, and I've asked for 30 hours. And so I go to work 4 days a week, and I have an extra day off. And it's part of my decision in relation to being married again. Just part of my journey. And so there's some things that we want to change. There are some other things that we sometimes turn to. I'm aware that music has been a thing that we've turned to kind of ease some of that pain. And men, I guess I'm speaking to you right now and say, I think sometimes we've turned to another woman because as a pain reliever before we're ready to pour love into it. Excuse me for being so blunt. But are you with me? Are you understanding what I'm saying? I would like for us to go through a what's the right way to say this, through a process of processing grief before you allow yourself to go into a love relationship where you can pour and pour and pour into another person's life. Because if it's just a pain reliever for you, you are now asking her to pour into your life. And that's not always kind. That's not a fact. I'll just be bold enough to say it's selfish. It's selfish from that, if we do it from that perspective. Say, just want us to think it through as we do our thing. Let's go to the next thought I had. One of the things that I discovered in my personal experience was I blessed my mom and dad. I never had a question, is there a God? But when I went through the cancer journey and through the death experience, I was like, God, who are you? I need to know who you are. I need to have more of an understanding about this God that I believe in and serve, and what does that mean and how does it affect me and my life? And I wanted to know what's happening on the inside of me in relation to that question. I remember thinking about the thought about being bitter, you know, like this is a negative experience, and asking myself, well, are you going to get bitter about this? And I remember contemplating about this and thinking like, what really is the value in being bitter? I mean, what do you get out of it? How is being bitter going to bless me or anybody else? And I didn't come up with any reason. I didn't come up with anything that said there's any value in bitterness. And so I said, not going to go there. It's just done. We're not going to go there. So which left you with what option? My next option was, well, then you're going to accept it. And I knew enough about God to realize that God was sovereign. I realized that God could have changed things if he wanted to. I realized that God permitted it to happen. And all at once it was like, now I'm the one that needs to accept this. And if I choose not to be bitter, I don't have options. There's where I am. The picture that came to me, well, even before the picture, I turned to the Bible. And I started reading like I haven't read before. And Psalms was a place to start. Somebody encouraged me, go to Psalms. David has a way of expressing himself and his emotions. And you can identify with that, okay? And so I went to Psalms especially, but I did a lot of reading. Because, I thought I knew who God was. But when I faced this issue in life, it made more questions than I wanted answers to what does this mean for me? And so this is one of the places I turned. One of the things that came to me that I came to understand, and the picture that came to me was, I needed to be crushed. I needed to be the end of myself. Myself doesn't have any place to exist personally. I mean, when I say myself, my personal will for my life. And the picture that came to me was a Gethsemane. We know Gethsemane as a place where Jesus said, not my will, but thine be done. And while that's true, and that was part of my journey, Gethsemane is also known as the place where they crush olives and where they press the olive oil out of olives. I was privileged to visit one of these olive presses. This particular one was underground. They had carved it out because of temperature control, which is the best when you do your olives. And then they had this big round stone table, and they would pour the olives out on this. And then they had this stone wheel with an axle stuck through it, and then they would push the axle, and the wheel would go over top of these olives and would just crush the olives, just make a mess out of them. And the oil would begin to flow away from those olives, and that was considered your number one oil. This was the oil that you would give to the priests for sacrifice. This was considered the best, and that's what you give to God, was the first crushing. And again, that was the picture I received for myself. God wanted to crush me. By nature, I was a leader. By nature, I was involved at church. I was involved at work. I was involved at school. And I was one of those that make it happen. And God gave me a mind to think about, well, how do we work through this problem? Let's find a solution. How do we work through this problem? Let's find, who do we need together to help? Let's get this thing going. What does it take? Okay, that's who I was. When I met cancer, I didn't solve cancer. God stopped me. And I ran up against something. I studied cancer. I asked questions about cancer. I visited places about cancer. But it didn't stop the cancer journey in my life. And God was in a crushing process, and it was helping me to understand that I'm not in control. And I could hear God say, and I don't want you to be in control. I could hear God saying, I want to be in control of your life. And I've pushed you to a point for you to have something where you can't. And I want you to see me in this journey. The next thing they did with the olives, after those olives were crushed, they would put them in bags that had flexible sides. And then they would stack these bags. Then they had this long, heavy pole that went over top of these bags, and the end of the pole was stuck into a hole in the wall. And at the other end of the pole, they would hang huge stone weights, and that brought the pressure down on the olives. And now the press began, and the olives were pressed. And again, the olive oil came out from that, and this time it was for your private use. So this oil was now used for the family use in the house, cooking or whatever, okay? After it was pressed for a while, it entered its second stage of pressing. And this time, they left them right there, but they hung more weights on this pole. This time, the oil that came out of it was used for like bearing grease. So just to explain, three different steps of oil coming out of this pressure and out of this Gethsemane. That's the name of an olive press. It's called Gethsemane. It made me think about Christ and his third time of prayer. Let this cup pass. And the pressure that he felt. We know that there were sweat drops of blood. To me, that spells pressure that he was experiencing. I felt pressure. I felt pressed out. When olives are pressed to that position, when they take what's left of it out of the bags, you can hold a match to it and it lights up. It's that dry. My position with God, I came to understand. He wants nothing of me. He wants nothing of me in charge. He wants to be in charge of my life. And it's one of the things I came to thank him for in my journey with my experience in the cancer world. I also came to understand, I came to the point where I thank God for my experience. I also came to understand that death is the result of sin, not the result of an ungood God. I just made a new English word. Death is a result of our fall, and God is good. And therefore, you have tulip stories. God shows him in the middle of us going through our result of sin experience in our life. And he shows up. He brings hope and redemption in that journey. And again, I trust you have your stories because I have mine. I have my stories where God met me at certain moments, certain times when I needed a new, what do you call it, a new boost at the time where I felt pretty low in my experience. As embarrassing as it is sometimes, I also found that just talking about my experience brought relief to me. It feels the same way about when you're involved in some kind of a sin and God puts it, it tells you you need to repent. And one of the things about repentance is confession. We don't like to confess our sins. We don't, that's not comfortable. Yet it's the right thing to do. And when I have confessed my sin, then there's a rest that comes into my heart. And I think you probably understand what I'm talking about. And when I was able to talk about my journey and my relationship with God and just talk to other men about this, there was a rest that happened inside here. I don't know that I can explain it to you. I can just tell you this is what happened. And I've concluded it has something to do with bringing into light. Look at John 3. I know John 3 verse 16 is a very popular verse, but go back a couple verses later, and there it says that the problem is that we hold it in darkness. When you share and confess, you bring it into light. And it's one of the things that brings relief to you is when we bring into the light. And that's how I felt about sharing my own journey and the weaknesses I had and how I was handling this. It felt good to share with somebody else, however that works. I learned that practicing gratitude became an essential. And I noticed you made a comment about gratitude. And to learn to share gratitude, even when you don't feel like it, make it a habit if you have to. It's a little bit like teaching your children to eat some kind of a food they don't care for. And, you know, they can be trained to like it. I've been there. I've been on both sides. I've had parents that asked me to eat something I didn't like, and I've asked my children to eat things that they didn't like. Tasting it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt at all. And I feel like if you're not experiencing gratitude, well, then do it. And learn to like and appreciate gratitude. It will come. And it's valuable. One of the things about gratitude is it puts me in an unselfish place. And it puts God in his rightful place when I offer gratitude. And when I don't have gratitude, I'm just selfish. I'm just thinking about myself and the problems that I have. So I like to just say, do it, because selfishness just turns into bitterness. And I also thought about, I remember after a period of time, let's just use the number 3 months, after a period of time, and I look back and I'm like, I'm different than I used to be. And just the day-by-day experience, it doesn't feel so different. But my view about life and about God and my journey was beginning to change me. And I could see I could relate to life differently than where I had been. Those are some of the things that I came to understand in my journey. So again, I'm not here to tell you that I understand all about grief. I'm just here to tell you there's some things that I went through in my own journey that I feel very, very blessed. Very blessed. I do encourage people when they go through their own journey. I think probably one of the hardest things about the grief journey is bringing back the part of you that leaves when your partner dies. And how that all happens, I don't know that I can explain. I've used the example, I just shared that the grief process is a mental process, I believe. It's part of thinking through this thing, being able to give up, to process, find a new normal, accept it, all as a mental process. And when I've talked to people that are in the grief process and still rather young in the grief process, I've explained to them a little bit like a sliver in your hand. And I tell them that, you know what? You can get a needle and you can go to that sliver and just, and out it comes. But I tell them, well, we don't do it that way. We take that needle and then we pick around. We pick around on it at a pain level that you can handle till the sliver's out. And I tell them, your grief journey is a painful journey. Do it at a pain level that you can handle. But don't stop. The sliver's got to come out. The sliver's got to come out. You do have to process the grief. You have to go forward with it. But don't allow it to overwhelm you to the point that you can't handle it and go from there. I want to read another verse. So we talked a little bit about Genesis 23, 1 and 2, Sarah died, Abraham grieved. The rest of the chapter talks about him buying a place to bury her. Genesis chapter 24, Abraham sends his servant to go find a wife for Isaac. The very last verse in chapter 24, Rebekah comes, Isaac takes her, and the Bible tells us, And Isaac was comforted. Find it interesting. Now we're talking about our children. And Isaac was comforted. Now, what I really like to look at, though, now I want to go to the next chapter. This is chapter 25 of Genesis. Very first verse. And again, Abraham took a wife. And again, Abraham took a wife. And her name was Keturah. I find it interesting. We call Abraham the father of faith. You know, there's a lot of stories about Abraham. But I find Abraham lost a wife. He mourned. And then he took another wife. And while it doesn't say a lot about it, it's there. It's part of his story. It's part of his narrative. And if I do my math correctly, he was pretty close to 140 years old. Because I think it said she was 127, and I think he was about 10 years older than she was. I'm giving him a few years till he married again, and that puts me, that's where I got my math, that he's probably about 140 years old. I wondered about your 96-year-old man. Was he too old? I think we have to admit, God has designed us in a way that relationship is valuable. And he's designed us to have relationship. I'm okay with the idea at 96 years old, and he says that this is now too old. I'm going to accept that. But I still like the idea, this is a God design to be married again. I share my father-in-law's comments. When I took an interest in Jackie, and before I went far with that relationship, I went to my father-in-law. And I've shared this story with some of you. And it's like, Dad, are you okay with me looking at another relationship? I have an interest in Jackie. What do you think? My father-in-law's response, I bless him, I feel like he was so honest. He said, Virgil, we've been praying for that for you. Now remember, it's his daughter that died. His daughter was my wife. I have a good relationship with my father-in-law. I still have a good relationship with my father-in-law and my mom-in-law, both. And Dad said, we've been praying for you. You need someone. It is biblically correct for you to marry again, but it will hurt. I learned a few things out of his expression. One is, I had his blessing, and he recognized it was biblically correct to marry again. And that was a voice of confidence for me, especially coming from him. But I also recognized when he made the statement, but it will hurt. I recognize there are other things that enter into this picture that I need to be sensitive to. There's other people that are involved. And as I journey forward with this, to give some consideration, what does that mean? For you, those of you that don't know me, I have a beautiful story. I had 7 children with my first wife. Jackie had 8 with her first husband. I today have 15 children. I claim them all, and I claim their spouses as well, and I claim all 37 grandchildren, and I claim 1 great-grandchild, and I claim the 2 that are on the way. I have a blessed story. I do. God has blessed me much, much in this journey. I have learned to enjoy my new relationship. Enjoy it greatly. I know what I lost. You know what you lost. And you view these things a little bit differently. I'll just be honest and say I took my first wife for granted. And once I lost, I more fully understood what I had. And I talked to my children. And I told them, I want to put more energy into my next relationship. I realize I took mom for granted. My wife blesses me today. I enjoyed talking to her just about daily life. And back when our relationship was just starting, it was just budding, and I would send her a text. And you know, when you send a text, and then down at the bottom, it has this little three little dots that kind of light up, you know, as soon as the next person starts a text back. And oh, that did my heart good when that thing would light up right away. Send the text, and she'd fire one right back. Oh, that felt good. And that was even before she knew I was interested, because that was part of our story. We were working together, putting together a program for Penn Valley here. And I had asked her to help in that. And in that journey, I had decided that, you know what, maybe this could go further than just working on a program for Penn Valley. But at that point, I hadn't told her yet. But I was enjoying our relationship and our conversations that we were having. When the time came that our program was done and I realized I had to make up another reason to give her a call. And when I approached that idea, she was like, oh, no, 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 no. You don't know who I am. And I had already listened to her testimony tape. And the next thing she did, her two youngest sons had turned to bodybuilding. And so, big shoulders, big arms. And they were standing beside her, one on each side. She's in the middle with this caption over the top. You single men, leave my mom alone. And she sent me that picture. I looked at the picture and I told her, I can really see you love your boys and your boys love you, and they're planning to take care of you. She had thought I'd look at the picture and like, thank you, glad to see you, but thinking I'd move on. When I responded, she was like, who is he? We continued our communication. She wasn't ready to move into a relationship yet. So she used this word that I'm communicating with this man. But she wasn't dating. I was fine with that. I didn't care, do you call it communicating or dating? I was enjoying the relationship that I was having. Then her children asked her, so mom, how often do you all talk? Well, we talk every day. Well, Bob, how long do you talk? Well, and her daughter said, Mom, you're dating. That did my heart good. There's a song that's titled, Let Your Heart Beat Again, something like that. The story behind the song, and I share this because this song made an impression for her, and it was a next step in her journey. The story behind this song is there was a surgeon that did a heart procedure on a lady, and he had taken the heart out, he had repaired the heart, he had put the heart back in again, and then when they tried to start it up, the heart would not beat. And after a bit, the surgeon leaned over and talked into this lady's ear and said, ma'am, I forget the name, I forget her name, we'll call her Mary. And she said, Mary, I've taken your heart out. I have repaired your heart. Your heart is ready to work again, but you have to tell your heart to beat again. I can't make it start. And the heart started beating. And therefore the song, and that song was something that helped Jackie in relation to allowing her heart to beat again. And it's part of her story, part of her journey in our relationship. Letting the heart beat again. Another privilege I have right now, she just got doing one of those physical checkups just this past week, or just this week. She's doing very fine. And in their conversation, they reflected back. She and nurse practitioner, I guess is the name for it, reflected back to 10 years ago when Denny had passed away and her physical condition then. I'd like to take a little bit of credit that she's in good health today. There's something about the sparkle in the eye and the spring in the step, even in her age, and it does make a difference. And when you can alleviate some of that stress and you have joy in life again, it's amazing. It's amazing. Men, I'm going to encourage you, every once in a while, you save your money and you take your wife out someplace to eat where it costs you more than $100 for a meal. It's worth it. It's worth it. It just make a special night, okay? It's not about money. It's about her. And remember, we're moving into a world of learning to know, going further, and not to take for granted. There's opportunities we've had in relation to sharing in ministry together. You can share in ministry by yourself, but it's different when we share together. There's a whole lot more, and it's, I don't know how to explain this, it's more than one plus one. I mean, the benefits multiply. And I find in myself there's a confidence that happens when you can communicate, and just like sharing this, she had opportunity to contribute thoughts into what I'm sharing. That blesses me. It blesses me when that kind of a thing can happen. And if you know her, she has identified herself, even that was part of our dating world, she identified herself and saying, you know what, I am a romanceaholic. I come from a background, I was like, what is that? But you know what, she enjoys that and she wants that. In fact, this coming Friday evening, we have a couples night at church, where it's an event especially designed for all the couples in church and doing something special together as couples. And who would you guess wants to be right in the middle of that? She loves that kind of thing, and I'm happy to help her. I just joy in a new relationship and being part of that journey. You know, these kind of things. I received cards from my first wife, but I received cards from my second wife. This year for Valentine's, she came to work with a whole bunch of balloons. You know, right in front of everybody, that's fine. That's good. That's good. I enjoy a relationship. And it's valuable. Being allowed to speak into the widower world, we still do. That's not forgotten. We still speak into those. In fact, with Ted passing away and we at the funeral today, Ruby was one of her friends. That door is going to open up for her and Ruby to connect. It'll happen. I'm confident it'll happen. We've also been blessed with allowing to speak and encourage the married again world. Because you have those that are wondering, can this for sure work? And what are the things that are involved? What do we need to consider, okay? And we're blessed to be allowed to speak into that and give a voice of confidence. And there's some, I agree, there's some things that are probably right and some things that are wrong about how we go about some of those things, and I'm not so worried about all of that. It's just that I would like to have some of those fears put to rest, that if God is in your journey, then it's right. This is a God design for you. One of the things that I had done is I had talked to all 15 of the children and asked their permission. So I make the statement that we dated a couple times to decide if we're going to date. And I would take her and we would go visit one of the children. And I didn't tell you, but in my journey with my children, 15 children, 37 grandchildren, one great-grandchild, and they're in 9 different states and 3 different countries. So we get to travel. We get to travel. And I'm quite okay with that. I'm quite okay with that. And then just to go share with them, bless them, and receive their blessing. It's a journey that I've learned to appreciate and enjoy. My journey with God has changed. How I journeyed with God and what I learned to know about God and how God relates to me and I to God. My question isn't so much, do you know God? My question is more, does God know you? And I think when the end of time comes, the question is going to be, does he know you? Because the Bible tells us there's going to be some of us, I may be careful of how I use the word us. There's some of us people that are going to say, Lord, Lord, this is what we did, and so forth. And he's going to say, I don't know you. And so my question is more, does God, does our Lord Jesus Christ know you? In my journey, my relationship with God is different than what it was prior, even though I would have told you I was a born-again Christian before that. But my relationship is just different. I'm not sure how I can explain it to you. It's just to say it is. And that can contribute to anybody. It doesn't have to be somebody in the widow's world. It can. Or in somebody in the remarried world. I don't care. Are you young or are you old? Are you single or are you married? The relationships that I learn about God can be used and contribute to anybody. I value what God took me through. And now being able to talk to maybe a 18-year-old, and I'm watching him and I'm like, he's trying to figure out who he is. He's doing some of those things that are, you know, he's not for sure who he is yet or who he wants to be. But it allows me to come alongside him and give him a word of encouragement. Just tell them, you know what? I had to figure out who I was. And I had to figure out who God was in relation to me. This was part of my journey. I share it with you. Go find God. And make sure that God knows you. And he will take you places that are going to be amazing, I'm confident. I love to share with young men like that. A man on his knees seldom stumbles. Crises don't usually make who we are. Crises usually reveal who we are. And you go through crises. You've gone through crises. And it's a way that God has exposed who I am. To die well means to love well. And again, we are the products of our past. But our past doesn't have to control our future. We can change. Let me end with, love the person that God has given you today before life teaches you to love her memories.